pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the program, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. Coming up on the program today, Bradley J. here in about a half hour. We'll talk Texas. A lot of us kind of predicted. I guess the margin was a lot bigger than a lot of us had expected with Cornyn and Paxton. But that's significant. And I'll tell you my theory on that in just a moment. But some other things that happened in Texas, Chip Roy loses and Al Green. The redistricting stuff in the House side kind of had some fallout there. But we'll get into that. We'll dive into that here in just a bit. Also in the program, Joey Clark, our Wednesday regular. He's got kind of an interesting perspective. So last week, if you weren't paying attention, it was holiday week. I get it. Maybe you're still not paying attention. A little dust up between Barry Moore and Jared Hudson. And it had to do with Christianity and who's, you know, lives up to their, or tries to live up to a Christian standard. So we'll get into that with him. He has a column that published on 1890 News, 1890news.com yesterday. And then at 11 o'clock hour, office victory. He seemed like he was going to win, but it was a surprise, the margin of victory. Andrew Sorrell defeated Derek Chin to win the GOP nomination for state auditor, and he's the odds-on favorite to win re-election. We'll hear from him in the 11 o'clock hour. And I'm kind of curious, you know, what do you think worked and what didn't work? Statewide election? Did he underestimate himself a little bit? This was one that a lot of people, he's going to lose, he has too many enemies, but no. It was a blowout. And even the most rosy scenarios didn't have him doing that well. So eager to hear from him. So I want to talk about something here, and I think we even see it in Alabama. And I was thinking about this. Yes, there is depressed Republican voter turnout in this primary election season. There is, and it's absolutely true in Alabama. Now, there's still more Republicans than Democrats, but Democrats are exceeding. And people just curious to me, they're just kind of ignoring it. But it's a real thing. But what it's doing in a Republican primary, okay, so Democrats are going, they're voting in their primary, and the numbers are big for them. But who are the Republicans that are still going out to vote? Who are the Republicans who are still dedicated to the cause? And this is the problem for some of these candidates right now. And this is a problem, I think, in Alabama for the establishment, to be honest. The people, it's a weird phenomenon because I think this is what happened in. Now it's not true absolutely. It's only true in you know, big statewide broad elections. But the dedicated few who are showing up for a Republican primary are the more MAGA oriented voter. the more grassroots, true believer. It's not the casual voter. The ones who listen to shows like this on a regular basis, whatever the Texas version of the Jeff Poor Show could be, I don't know. But just look at it. You're seeing these, you know, right flank candidates in the Republican Party wallop the establishment candidate. So think about it. Who are these Republican voters? And the thing we talked about all throughout this election cycle and the lead up to last Tuesday, the high number of undecideds. I think undecideds stayed home. They vote. Sure. They voted in 2022. Maybe they voted in 2024 too. They stayed home. And the people who had their minds made up, they came out and voted. And that, I mean, it wasn't a huge hit, but like a Danielle Duggar beating a Matt Simpson. The probably the more the way we see it, you got to look at it, is probably John Wall exceeding expectations by leaps and bounds. Barry Moore doing a little bit better than the polls had shown. But Republicans got a Democrat problem. And some of that vote, they would vote in a Republican primary, it kind of watered down the quote unquote conservativeness of the primary. I think when it went Democrat. Some of it. But Democrats had big gains in Madison County. They had big gains in Tuscaloosa County. Story, April Marie Fogle kind of gets into it. There's a good, great chart there. 1890 News, 1890News.com. And look at the 2022 Democrat primary vote and put it side by side with the 2026 Democrat primary vote. It is remarkable. There is so much more Democrat enthusiasm. And look at how Republican turnout has waned in these same places. Republicans got a problem here. They got an enthusiasm gap to close. I don't know what the answer is. I talked to a lawmaker last night about this. Shamari Figures has chosen to run in AL2. He's not running in the 1st Congressional District. He lives in Montgomery. He is going to run in that 2nd Congressional District. And he's no fool. He may be a fool about the I-10 tunnel, the Wallace Tunnel. But on politics, he's going to raise a lot of money. And the 6-1 map stands, I think it will. There's a possibility. I'm not 100% certain. But I think it ultimately will. If you get a weak Republican candidate, that's going to be a problem. That district has gone Democrat in recent memory. That's been 20 years. Bobby Bright, the former mayor of Montgomery, won as a Democrat. And think about it like this. Representative Marcus is from Coffee County. He's the odds-on favorite right now to be the nominee. Shamari Figures is going to be waving around the Montgomery flag. That's where all the population is. And the Montgomery vote will turn out as the primaries have shown. And let's say they pay off Joe Reed to get his ADC apparatus in motion with the yellow ballots. Better watch out. Figures is not going to be as well positioned as he is with the 5-2 map. but I wouldn't count him out. You could still have a 5-2 map, given the cycle. Republican vote, just not showing up. And I know, like, a lot of you are like, well, this is not what I want to listen to. Doom and gloom. But the numbers don't lie, guys. Republicans got to figure this out. But the side effect, like I said, I think you're seeing across the board nationally the real true believers who are going to show up to vote, who are reliable voters, have more of a say in these Republican primaries, and you're getting more conservative candidates because of that. And Texas is an example. Listen, there's a lot of hype around James Tallarico in Texas. There's no way they're going to run some of his past comments, some of his pandering, six genders, non-binary God, the stuff that contradicts the Bible, the veganism. They're going to run that on a loop. And he's running in Texas, not California. It's like I've been saying, somebody said to ChatGPT, create a crazier version of Beto O'Rourke. And that's what it spit out. Text line 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, that's how you do so. Yesterday, we were talking about this in the last segment. The three-judge panel, Stanley Marcus, Terry Moore, and Anna Menasco. they had their minds made up. They do not care for the antics of the Alabama legislature. I think you're going to lose. I think they're going to lose. I think the Supreme Court is going to look at this and say, you didn't evaluate this. This preliminary injunction. They're playing lawfare here. You have federal judges, surprise, engaging in the lawfare game over an Alabama congressional seat. So you got this pre-written, like 500-page document. And what I find is it's just so off-putting. And we read it over and over again yesterday. I can read it again. After an exacting review, we conclude that the preliminary injunction must issue. Ultimately, we cannot see our way clear to require Alabamians to cast their votes in the 2026 election under a districting plan tainted by intentional race-based discrimination. So there they are, casting aspersions on Alabama and its legislature. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
But somehow on and on I go. I keep on rolling with the flow. Folks said that he asked me how I bought it. I told him on credit. Daddy just smiled. I'll never forget it. Said some things just glitter and shine. Taught us that love.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Daddy never was.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106. We need to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is hit me up there and we'll respond to whatever it is. I love it when people text me stuff from 1819 News, as if I haven't seen it before. That just makes me laugh. Let's see here. That's from the last hour. Text line being a little slow here. Here we go. Michael, it's not a happy news, but I keep saying boomers and there's INS across the finish line in primaries. That's going to lose 50% of the vote in the general. The more they push, Israel is going to be our greatest ally, and we're now going to nation build more. Republicans will lose. That's the exact opposite of what we won 2016, 2024. I don't think it's that. I mean, it's in that vein. I don't think it's that specific. I think the price of gasoline at, like, you know, excess of $4 a gallon. There's a little remorse there. It's not enough remorse where people are like, yeah, sure, I'm going to go out and vote Democrat now. I mean, maybe in some places. But there's enough remorse there. You know, I'm tired of this. I got my hopes up. Had my eye on that new bass boat, expecting the economy to get better. There's no way I'm going to be able to afford that now. It's just that. It's like, it zaps the life out of your politics. It's the gas prices. It's not even necessarily just the economy at large. I mean, things are more expensive, but, I mean, there's always a built-in rate of inflation. We're never going to go backwards on prices. The money supply will be inflated. We'll do away with the penny, you know, whatever. But it's a psychological game. It's like everything is just more expensive and there's less money in my bank account at the end of the month once I pay all my bills. Why should I get excited to go out and vote for if Trump's not even on the ballot? That's just kind of your casually engaged voter. I don't think they're like, I don't think there's this like Israel, to say it, like an Israel derangement syndrome. There may be some people who, hey, this is not what I voted for, but that's not the big picture. Tim, Jeff, don't you think it's kind of crazy how Democrats flip things for years? Most people in the South were considered what you would call blue dog Democrats. And now they're trying to say they're representing the party for the African-American people. And they were actually the ones that had them in chains. Yeah, I you know that Democrat equal like fairness. The Democrat district, the Democrat leaning district equals like racial fairness is an argument that has to be made without the construct of it's a policy argument, but you have to. I don't think you could do it. These judges are amped up, and I was telling Dale Jackson this earlier. Yes, sure, there's a partisan leaning there, but I think they just have it out for the governor and the legislature. That they see themselves, we're in the federal judiciary, and how dare these rednecks in the Alabama legislature defy our edict? We're going to show them. We must be respected, and you must respect what we have to say. You can't go do this on your own, and we're going to make an example out of you. Ultra Runner, I'm sick of MSM coverage of this court order. I want to read a news article. Court order, race blind, the plan requiring additional majority Jack district. Well, black district. Let me let the table this one, Ultra Runner. It's a little lengthy. We'll get to it later on in the program. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Bohr Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Hand me my hat. Excuse me, man, but where's the door? From Carolina down to Georgia, smell the jazz.
The Jeff Forrest Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line would be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. That's how you get in touch with the program. So to come on the program, Joey Clark from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. And to Andrew Sorrell, the state auditor, winning his primary election last Tuesday outright. We'll hear from him in the 11 o'clock hour. But joining us now, we're going on this program. Really wanted to get him on, kind of talk about what happened last night. But Bradley Jay from Breitbart News is with us. Bradley, how are you?
Doing well, Jeff. Appreciate you having me on this morning.
Hey, thanks for making time. I'll say this. I wasn't surprised that Paxton won, but I am surprised by the margin a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, 28 points. I mean, that was not reflected in any polls. I mean, for an incumbent to lose in a primary by 28 points, and this isn't like Louisiana with Bill Cassidy, who lost in their primary and he missed the runoff entirely. Like, Cornyn has been around. I mean, he's a four-term senator. He was elected statewide before that. He was on the Supreme Court. He was the state attorney general. I mean, this guy's been a fixture in Texas for almost half a century. I mean, just 18 months ago, he was a few votes shy of becoming Senate Majority Leader. Just an unbelievable turn of events, and it's really shows how the Republican Party is doing a hard pivot right now. monumental victory for Paxton.
Well, here's sort of my, and this is my theory, and I don't know this. I mean, I need to look at the numbers a little more closely before I spout off here, but I think it applies to Alabama in some ways, that the Republican turnout is down. Republican turnout is way down in Alabama, but the impact it's having is the casual voter was undecided, not engaged, just stays home. And your more motivated voter is more oriented toward the MAGA phenomenon. And that's why you're seeing some of these results in a lot of places, because the true blue Republican voter, the grassroots, is really kind of dictating the ebb and flow here.
Well, I mean, with Cornyn and Paxton, I mean, 28 points. Cornyn can blame that on low turnout if he wants, but it's hard to credibly suggest.
Well, he would have lost, yes, regardless. But the point of the margins you're seeing, yeah, like these eye popping margins you're seeing with these guys who are the Trump endorsed candidates, I think it has something to do with that.
Well, if you're an establishment candidate and you're worried about these margins, maybe you need to do something to give your voters a reason to vote for you. So I don't know, Jeff. I just feel like it's really just more of a repudiation of not just the substance, but also the style of these. I mean, you can call it more moderate, you can call it establishment, you can call it down the middle, you can call it, you know, these more behind the scenes operators, but that's just not what voters want right now. And so if this is your style, if you're a politician, then you need to at least do something to convey to voters that you're doing more to give them what they want. And I haven't seen anybody really effectively do that
yet. No, they just point fingers and blame Trump. And that's do you want to win like the talking point on cable news, or do you want to win the election? And a lot of these guys just aren't getting that, like, you know, and they're playing the victim card or whatever, but you're losing. Like, what's the point of this exercise if you're not trying to win the election?
Yeah, and look, if you are a John Cornyn who's making your pitch to voters saying, well, I'm a legislator, I can work across the aisle, I can raise money for Republicans, I don't understand why that appeals to anybody. What are Democrats trying to do right now that Republicans can say is beneficial to the voters or the party to work with them on? I mean, very little. And you're claiming that you've raised all this money for other Republican senators. Well, like what is the Republican Senate doing? Who cares? I mean, it is with in their eyes, it's all about just the numbers of the and majorities and how many other folks have your color jersey on. Well, that's not how voters see it. I mean, voters vote for Republicans not because they vote for because they love the Republican Party and what it stands for. They do because more often than not, the candidates who are doing what they care about, whether it's on immigration or trade or the economy, tend to be more Republicans. That doesn't mean they love most Republicans. So like that whole the Cornyn style of politics in the Republican Party is increasingly not something that voters are drawn to, and I think that's why the Cornyn style of politicians are getting tossed aside. And look, as you and I have talked about before, one of the most impactful things that Donald Trump has done is show voters that they can expect more from their politicians. Voters don't just have to hold their nose and choose between and choose the least bad option. They can expect a lot more. And that has changed so quickly that it's really blindsided a lot of these politicians, particularly in the United States Senate.
I mean, these guys, they get so wrapped up in the Washington game, raising money, and I guess they conflate the war chest with their vulnerability. But like, and Will Hampson and I talked about this a little yesterday, the old playbook doesn't work like it used to. Everything seems like these guys like Cornyn, this seems to be kind of running off like a 2016 or 2015 playbook. And, you know, there's something that's changed in the electorate, a change in the process where these consultants, they haven't really quite figured it out yet. The messaging or whatever it is, but these high-paid consultants, they see this a lot in Republican Party politics, but we've seen it in the past on the Democrat side in presidential elections with like Hillary Clinton or whatever, or Kamala Harris when she ran the first time. You hire, you spend all this money, and it you're not... There's too many people trying to get their slice of the pie, and they're not necessarily – that doesn't translate into W's.
It doesn't. And I think that one of the big problems with Washington, with campaigns and elections, we certainly saw this in Texas, is that there's no real need for innovation. Certainly if you look at these four-letter word campaign committees, the NRSC, the NRCC, and they exist basically just to fleece their clients of money. Who are their clients? Well, their clients are built in. It's incumbents, and it's people who win primaries with very, very rare exceptions. The entire ecosystem is built around the dominance of not just on the Republican side, but the Democrat side too, but the dominance of these campaign committees and how they enrich everyone who gets a slice of that pie. But they're utterly incompetent. And I think that the entire system needs to be kind of broken apart and rebuilt for them really to be effective. You look at everybody who gets a slice of this pie. It's the folks who do campaign ads. It's the comms strategists. It's the get out the vote people. The people who do all these companies that do the text and the polling. It's all built around this antiquated system that has not moved as quickly as Trump has remade the party and shifted how voters think about these candidates. And so something's got to change because right now the system clearly doesn't work. And the Democrats have been forced to deal with change a little bit because so many of their, on the radical left, their candidates have been better at circumventing that system and going directly to the voters and raising money. But Republicans are starting to catch up, and it's really caught a lot of folks on the back foot.
Yeah, the Democrats, they have sort of the same phenomenon, and I think it'll really show up for them in 2 years for the presidential cycle, because the problem with the Republicans have this ongoing civil war. It's been going on since 2015, and sort of the post George W. Bush hangover and everything that came out of that. With the Democrats, they haven't really had a competitive primary since 2008. We haven't had a real drag out, knockdown fight over the war of ideas for the Democratic Party in a long, long time. They got to have that at some point. And they've been putting it off for the sake of winning an election. But I don't see how they avoid it in 2 years. But it's just like, you know, once upon a time, you had like a Nancy Pelosi who really wielded a lot of power and could steer money in places. And she's very good with donors, very good with Silicon Valley, very good at Hollywood. And you don't have that sort of adult in the room on the Democrat side anymore.
No, you don't. There are a lot of reasons to suggest that you might not for a while. First off, in the House, I mean, if you look at the way that the margins, the partisan margins are, they're far fewer battleground states. You're never going to have, or it's difficult for me to foresee any Speaker of the House who has the kind of margins that Pelosi did. Certainly the Republican speakers have had at times. It's always going to be, you know, maybe 5-6, maybe if it's just an absolute electoral landslide, you might have into the double digits over the minority, but you're always going to have that wing of your party that doesn't need you, that doesn't need the money that you raise, that can go around this calcified party system, and that the speakers or minority leaders or whoever don't have control over. So things are changing fast. Certainly, if you look at certainly the Republican Party, Republican senators are saying, well, John Thune helped build the Republican Party, or John Cornyn. Cornyn himself is claiming credit for building the Republican Party. Well, it was kind of built on a foundation of sand. Again, it gets back to, you know, the Republican Party was not one that was built to be responsive to the voters. It was built to be the least bad option, to be a little bit better than the Democrats, and that's really about it. And now that Republican voters have other options other than those manufactured by the establishment doesn't know how to handle it. They're because of so much of what Trump has done, Republicans, if Republicans will get behind Trump, are better equipped to handle those changes than the Democrats are. But Jeff, as you say, man, the Democrats, their chickens are going to come home to roost. If you look at everything else that's going on with Section 2 and the Democrats' built-in unconstitutional advantage there getting undercut, the Democrats really are in trouble. Who is going to lead their party? Is the leader of their party, when I look at like the 2028, who's going to lead their ticket? Is it the person who's going to be the moderate and appeal to moderates? Is it someone like AOC who's going to be able to gin up the base? I really don't know. But man, pop the popcorn. I'm excited to see how that unfolds, because they really do have a war on their hands.
Yeah, I think they'll have a good night November 3rd. But here's the deal. The deal would be just an untenable expectation to live up to. They're going to be screaming. The base that brings them to the dance is going to want blood. They're going to want handcuffs, and, you know, they're going to want perp walks. They're not going to get that. They're going to get power. I don't know about the Senate, but I think they got the House. And I just think that's going to put them in obviously they want that opportunity, but it's going to put them in a box in a 2028 presidential election cycle that is going to be a free-for-all.
Well, yeah, the Democrats say that they want the House, but I'm not sure it's in their best interest for 2028 for Democrats to gain the majority in the House in 2026. Under a Speaker Jeffries, the party would have to go so far to the left that it would turn off voters, some of these independents and moderates in 2028. but also it would not go far enough, as you say, to please the radicals. There wouldn't be people in handcuffs outside of deferring folks to the Trump Department of Justice. I mean, what are they really going to be able to do? So it might actually be counterproductive for Democrats to win the House in 2028. The party has just gone so far to the left that it's going to be difficult for there to be an adult in the room leading that party right now with that coalition that is being held together by threads right now.
Yeah, and they're going to, I mean, they're going to have their civil war. They're going to win power, but their candidates are all going to have to run against the Capitol Hill in some ways. And that's just going to complicate matters. Like, they got a mess on their hands that they've been putting off for two decades now. I mean, they have been putting this off. And at some point, they got to do this. They got to figure out who is going to be the leader of the party, right? I mean, it's inevitable.
Yeah, and look, just this week, I mean, Democrats are trying to work out the which states go first in trying to determine who their presidential nominee is going to be, whether it's the Iowa caucus or the New Hampshire primary or South Carolina or whatever. I mean, they're fighting like cats and dogs over stuff like that because it is so much more important for Democrats and Republicans because their coalition is being held together by a thread, and all these different states. It could vary wildly what type of nominee you're going to get or who's going to win these different states. I am not envious of what Democrats are going through right now, but they're probably, for the long-term health of the party, does need to be some kind of a bloodletting there.
Bradley, folks want to find you online. Where can they look?
Breitbart.com and on X or Twitter or Instagram at Bradley AJ.
Bradley, we appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
Appreciate you, brother.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I saw the light. I saw the light. No more darkness. No more night. Now I'm so happy. No sorrow.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. Want to be in touch with the program, that's what you got to do. Let's get back to this. Ultra Runner, I'm sick of the MSM coverage of this court order. I want to read a news article titled, Court Orders, Race-Blind Plan Requiring Additional Majority Black District. Race blind and majority black, that is 79-page order in five words. The court deserves merciless ridicule for its logical fallacies. Reporting in the national media is off target. I think the 1819 could hammer the lunacy of this ruling. What say you? The expertise here, and I think you will see the lunacy of the ruling hammered by 1819 News and other outlets. I think they're, like I said, they're dragging their feet. This is less about the ruling and less about the arguments and less about the merits and more, I believe, about the dismissiveness of the Alabama legislature and Speaker Ledbetter, particularly Speaker Ledbetter, of the federal courts. But I've never understood this. I've never understood why the federal courts think that they can tell the legislature what they can and can't pass. Their power is, they could say it's unconstitutional, but it has to be challenged. But right now, the way they're going about it, and look, their order was vacated. It wasn't as if the legislature defied their order. Their order was vacated. But they interpreted it that way. Like, how dare this pitiful, pathetic... the whole state government entity work against us. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Every gambler knows